Welcome to the 2023 series of the Property Report podcast by Property Guru. This year, we will be exploring the latest trends surrounding the real estate industry across different markets in Asia. For today's episode, we will take a deep dive to understand the appeal of luxury properties across Asia. And to enlighten us about this topic are our highly respected judges of the Property Guru Asia Property Awards Series, starting with Ms. Acme Wu, Marketing Director, Niseko Tourism, and member, Greater Niseko Judging Panel.
Hello, everyone.
Next is Mr. Han Lo, Independent Property Consultant, Trainer, and Member, Malaysia Judging Panel.
Good afternoon.
And finally, Mr. Pete Tirangun, Director, Akatan Company Limited, and Member, Thailand Judging Panel.
Hello.
Hello, judges, and thank you for joining us today. For our first question, how would you define luxury properties in the context of your specific markets?
So for Niseko, I would say definitely the exquisite alpine homes and apartment style that offer all-season nature retreat for the most discerning clients in the world will be how I would define a Niseko Japan. How about you, Mr. Han Lo?
In Malaysia, I think when we talk about luxury properties, there are two attributes to luxury property in Malaysia. I think we're looking at number one being expensive, lah. You know, when you say luxury, that means it's got a higher price point. And the other thing it would be the other thing is that it's got to be at a strong location. So when you say about, you know, I'm looking for a luxury property, it's usually going to be quite highly priced, and also it's going to be in a strong location, and in Malaysia, the circumstances would be probably in the central business district. So that's how we look at luxury properties: high end, expensive, in a strong location.
For Thailand, we have a few markets like Bangkok, Phuket, Hua Hin, and a little bit of Pattaya and some other place. But yes, the definition or, you know, the character of luxury in Thailand, it's a lot to do with either in the city where you sort of have to stick with the greeneries area, the Central Park, and then you have to have the convenience of the SkyTrain and the BTS line. And then this is where it's very multicultural, a lot of international companies, embassies, and Western and Japanese are like the strongest influence in this area. So it becomes a very, very strong, very condensed area. And this is where everyone wants to have either rent or they want to own a property there. So this is one of the key market. And then we're seeing a lot more infused in terms of the hospitality experience being brought into the property itself, either in a common area or in the unit itself, in the house.
For our second question, judges, which cities are considered hotspots for luxury property investments and why?
Well, for us in Hokkaido, definitely Niseko is a very hot spot for luxury property investment. Because we have really good snow in the world. Not sure if the two gentlemen have been here before, but we also have very comfortable summer here. Compared in Asia, it's definitely a very nice temperature and, you know, beautiful nature. And these two reasons allow us to see a boom in the demand. And then subsequently, we have become as Asia's number one lifestyle destination, and definitely has presenting a pretty good investment opportunity in Japan, but outside of Tokyo. So it's pretty special, I would say. Pete, I would guess Thailand is definitely a very, very, a lot of luxurious property investment, and I would love to know why.
Yeah, I think we everyone knows Bangkok and Phuket as two sort of major destinations for luxury properties. I have to say it's not yet the super luxury. It's at the luxury level. premium. The Phuket, I think what attracts people to Thailand, it's a country, you know, with the city or the ocean. People are attracted for certain lifestyle, but the secondly, I think it has a good rental opportunity. The take-up rates of Phuket and center of Bangkok, the luxury area, it's actually has great potential, and it's actually renting now more than the surrounding area. This is especially after COVID, and people have been migrating or moving with unlimited, they don't specify the length of time they're staying, so they're renting long term and they're staying here a lot. This is a lot of Europeans. And then we are seeing in Bangkok, rental, we were just doing some research, and rental yield for Bangkok is about 4.5 to 5, sometimes 5.5, even in the really nice luxury properties. In the center city condominiums, but home outside is a bit more difficult because that's more for residential living. And then in Phuket, you see a slightly higher rental yield. But also both locations has a really good take up.
Malaysia, essentially, we look at the luxury properties being located at the three main city centers, mainly in Penang Island on the east coast, okay, Batu Feringhi side and all that. We've got some very nice luxurious hotels and very nice luxurious condominiums. So a lot of people go to Penang and they go there for a holiday. And they look at properties there, and the luxury properties are all located at that site. So if somebody said, I'm going to Penang in Malaysia, they know where Penang is. The other hotspot that is more commonly would be KL Golden Triangle area, where the Petronas Twin Tower is. So we got the Petronas Twin Tower, used to be the main center point of all the high-end condominiums and the luxurious properties. Condominiums are located near there, but that's now shifted already. So that point of the Golden Triangle has now shifted to be a portion of the new Golden Triangle, because we do have now the TRX area, which is also being developed, and we got a nice office building there, PNB 118, and we got some nice condominiums coming up on that side. And we've got BBCC and we've got PNB 118. So we've got from one center point of KLCC itself now to shift up to two different points. So the triangle has actually gone bigger, and that's where all these luxurious condominiums are, you know. And luxurious condominium in this aspect, I'm looking at maybe Ringgit Malaysia, $1,500 per square foot and above, which USD would be about 333 USD per square foot. So that's the range we are looking at for this luxurious condominium. And the other area would be the Johor Bahru City Centre, which is just a stone's throw away from Singapore, which you got another area whereby a lot of luxurious properties are coming up there. So the three areas that we look at the end in Malaysia, whenever you come and you look at and you say you want to invest and you want to buy, will be Penang Island, on the east coast, the Golden Triangle area of KLCC, okay, in Kuala Lumpur, and also Johor Bahru City Centre. These are the three main areas whereby we have a lot of expats coming in, a lot of high-end condominiums there, and a lot of luxurious properties being developed in that area. So these are the three hotspots that is happening in Malaysia. And even if you're a global investor and you're coming to Malaysia and you say, oh, I'm going to invest a property in Penang, I'm going to invest a property in KL or Greater KL, I'm going to invest property in Johor Bahru City Centre, people would know where these areas are. And so those would be the three hotspots for Malaysia. And looking at $1,500 ringgit Malaysia per square foot, all right, and above will be about 333 USD on a per square foot basis. Malaysia do have another category known as branded condominiums. So that branded condominiums will be condominiums which are linked to hotels. So they use better quality architects, a better quality landscaping architect and all that. It's hooked up to a hotel operator, and that one will be a more, it would be a grade A luxury property, like the Kempinski, the Four Seasons and all that. And they've got the hotel hospitality to service this condominiums also. And those we're looking at about maybe about $2,500 and above. So it would be about $444 per square foot. So the trees are the three hotspots, and these are the two categories of luxurious properties: the high end, expensive, strong location, and the branded ones for Malaysia.
Rehan, do you know if the branded residences have it's higher price, but how is it with the occupancy, the take up? Does it help or does it slow down?
Yes, it does. It does. I think in terms of pricing, in terms of rental, in terms of attractiveness, we see, based on the data, on the research that we have, it's easily 20 to 30% above market. So even if you are a high end, okay, yes, you're high end, but if you are branded, right, and you've got, let's say you've got a Hong Kong movie star who's endorsing it, or we've got a Hollywood actor who is endorsing it, who's staying there and all that, it actually goes higher. Because you know why? For global citizens and all that, they come in and come out, they take the train, they take the ERL, they come to KL, they want to be easily accessible to this luxurious development. Okay, they bring their suitcase, they check in, all right? And what they do is, because it is linked up to this branded, this hotels and all that, the hospitality, the concierge, the type of materials, the quality of the carpets, the design of the rooms, the prints, the color, the finishes, the design, the furniture and all that are all top quality. So you come in, you stay there, and you stay however you want to be at the end of the day. And then at the end of the day, you move on to your next home and all that. And in some developments, what they then do is that, assuming during the summer seasons in your home, assuming let's say you're from the UK, assuming you're from the UK, and in the summer season, you're in the UK itself, okay? So for 3 months, your investment in KL, it's vacant. Okay, it's vacant at the moment now. You can work on an arrangement with the hotel operator to actually rent out your unit. Because for all purpose of discussion, it is same quality as the hotel rooms itself. And the services is the same. So if you're an investor, you said, hey, you know, it's almost like a timeshare thingy, but actually
I was going to say timesharing.
Yeah, that's right. So I said, hey, you know, it's always well kept. Somebody's always using it. All right. Mm-hmm. Top quality materials, top quality hospitality, somebody to do my Adobe. I walk in, I walk up, always clean, good quality materials and all that. And if I'm not using it, I'm getting income. So yeah, you actually can see a 20-30% increase.
Yeah, I totally agree, yeah, because right, we actually have a Parkai and Niseko now in the area. And mm-hmm, normally in the past, we have a lot of more international investors, but Parkai is actually the first property that was actually very popular among the domestic market, a lot of Japanese investor. And this summer, we see a lot of traffic from especially Tokyo, Osaka coming up in summer and then go to stay in their property in Parkai and Niseko. And that's definitely, they see a very steady traffic because we are a ski destination. It's usually very popular in winter, but Parkai and Niseko is actually very stable and then very good income, I think, generating for their investor. And like Han say, you know, with a famous brand like Parkai, they definitely have very strong connection for different, I guess, KOLs. So definitely kind of support their status and make sure this high standard is being communicated through their network. So it's definitely very strong.
Thank you, judges. Now, how do cultural and social factors impact the design and features of luxury properties in Asia?
Yeah, I think the big part is the the younger generations, I wouldn't say just millennials, but just pre-millennials and also the rest, seems to have that stronger influence on the new properties, the new lifestyle, the new sort of residential definition in the city. They are the one who, you know, this has been talked, you know, over the world, where we know it's all personalized, more dedicated space, personalized functions, and they no longer wants to have too large a space, but they want to have something that is functional, you know, functional in a way, much more personal, and something that infuses the experience of a hotel or a travel. They don't need to travel. They can do something a little bit more at home. They can bring in services. They can bring in salon, hairdressers, or even spa doctor to provide some services back in the common area or in the unit itself. It's like bringing in a little bit of a hospitality element back into the place.
Very interesting, because so for Niseko especially, I will say again, it's a blend between international and domestic architect, but like Hans is mentioning, more personal space, but in the Japanese Alpine feel way, so it's definitely very unique. And actually, we're seeing more going back to like Japanese culture roots. So for example, the indigenous tribe from Japan, Hokkaido, we're seeing some kind of design element being bring back to a lot of the interior or exterior design for the property, luxury properties in our area. So I think bringing back the traditional sense, but still in a personalized way, that's how we are seeing it in Niseko.
For Malaysia, we're in the center. We are a bit like in the confluence of Asia and also on the western area and all. So we're like pretty much smack in the middle. So in Malaysia, we see a fusion of designs, a mix of Western and Asia. We see it in our designs and development. We actually when they built this luxury accommodations and luxury condominiums, it's an environment which they are trying to develop to make it comfortable for the buyers and for the occupants. They are actually affected by the temperature and the climate. So in Malaysia, at the end of the day, the Asian values are very much attuned towards the feng shui. So we talk about the five elements, you know, we talk about water, fire, earth, metal, and wood. All right. So that's what they do. We talk about ventilation. We talk about airflow. We talk about landscaping. So you look at the traditional Malay houses. We talk about the even some of the Japanese houses and all that, you know, they're very airy, you know, on stilts and that kind of stuff. Simply because our temperature is a little bit warmer. But for the western side, they it's always got, they got winter, so they got winter, so they got smaller windows and everything's very enclosed. They have bay windows because they want to attract the sunlight and all that. In Malaysia, we do have those windows also because we want the natural lighting, but it's different. So we do have a mixture. We do have developments whereby in a single block, two units side by side. One will have a balcony which is open to allow for somebody to step up after dinner and have a cigarette or also just feel the fresh air. Okay. But the unit on an exit will not have a balcony. It's got an enclosed area. So that means you've got double sliding doors. You can go inside down there. So you're not exposed to the external element, but you can use that space as a reading area, or maybe can have a cup of coffee, but it's not exposed. So those who are from the western side may want something like that. Those who are from the Asian side will want a balcony and all that. So that is actually incorporated into the type of development. So we deal with fusions. Japanese Asians prefer a bathtub because they like to soak into it. So some bathrooms will have a bathtub. But for the Europeans and all that, they have a shower. They don't really like bathtub. So sometimes when you look at the requirements, they say, oh, I just want a shower because I can just throw the thing. It's a little bit more smaller. I just have a quick shower and then I'm off. So it's different. So some developments you can see that, okay, this one has got a shower, this one has got a bath, this one has got a balcony, this one has got a bit of an area there, but it's in an enclosed area and all that. So you choose. So we have different designs to meet different kind of requirements and different kind of tastes. And then Asian developments is about a Balinese garden, Japanese garden, all right? But, you know, at the end of the day, for what's this, European designs, they are a little bit more cosmopolitan, a bit more modern, more colours, more concrete, and that sort. So in Malaysia, we see a confluence of different type of developments being built in an upscale residential area. And even if you look at some of these luxurious condominiums and all, you can see there are different elements. So some areas we have like Asian theme, a lot of gardens, a lot of streams, koi ponds and all that. And then sometimes you can go to the other side where you got, oh, you know, it's got an open space library, or you've got, you know, sofa sets, you know, that kind of stuff to cater for different occupants. Same structure, same building, but at different levels. So you can go to the Asian level, you can go to the Western level. And I see a mixture of a design and materials coming into play. So that's what's happening in Malaysia. So really interesting on Malaysia's side.
It is funny you mentioned enclosed area, which I think will sell to Filipinos just because for some reason we're afraid. Well, not me. I love direct sunlight, but most Filipinos don't want direct sunlight for some reason. I could never understand. For our fourth question, judges, how is the demand for luxury properties in Asia evolved over the years, and what factors have influenced this trend?
I think there's always a demand for luxury properties, all right, number one. Number two is because of the lifestyle of an Asian is a little bit more affluent nowadays. We're a little bit more educated. More often than not, we are Western or educated. So our tastes are sometimes more inclined towards the modern designs. We watch TV, we like Hollywood. You look at the Manhattan as the benchmark of condominium, of luxurious living and all that. So when we come back to Malaysia and we look at them, say, hey, I want something like how I can live in New York, you know, that kind of stuff. I want something which I saw that building that in that TV series and all that, which I watch on TV from Hollywood. So there's a lot of change at the moment now to Western taste. But I believe also some of the more mature buyers and investors still enjoy the traditional type of building, a lot of natural materials, wood, landscaping, ventilation, color, contrast, flowers, trees, and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's always going to be demand. I think Asia is a very interesting place. Malaysia is a very interesting place at the end of the day. So in an upscale neighborhood, you can see different types of developments, which meets different type of target markets. So sometimes you can see modern design is done for the Europeans expat, and then after that the traditional design, I mean the more Asian design for the Japanese expats and then who are down here and all that. But I think because of the lifestyle, because of the new money of all these younger generation, there's always going to be demand for luxury properties in Malaysia. I think they're more educated. They travel a little bit more. They've got internet at the moment now. So their taste, needs, wants and aspiration are all at the highest level. And they've got this hunger to try different things and all that. So as developers go into the market, introduce new areas and all that, those are more educated, more affluent and all that will require a luxury properties which is designed to meet their aspiration. So I think there's always a demand.
Ms. Acme, Sir Pete, would you like to add anything?
Okay, I'll add something. For the demand, I think it's like when Hans mentioned branded residences. So that's where I felt like it had been, it sort of picked up a few, sort of like 6, 7, 8 years ago, it picked up. And now those projects are realized and people will start to see how things work. But then we're still in the rest of the market. It's still in the experimental period where everyone is finding a way, finding a positioning to for the developers to create something more than just the property itself. Adding more services, adding more functions. Now they put more space for the back of houses, even in just a condominium. So, and they try to put some playroom, co-working space. We have seen some salons, reception area that is very much as large as a hotel lobby. So it's all experimental. Some of them, I have to say, to be honest, that it doesn't work. Some of them do really well. But you're talking about a team of condominium or residential developers cranking out ideas, you know, from outside the box. So that's where I think the demand, the trend, that's where it is evolving. We're still not seeing how it's going to land. But Thailand is definitely one of the sort of experimental market.
Yeah, for example, in Niseko, we definitely see more and more developer and want to focus on targeting like workation, since a lot of people are trying to work from home or work from their holiday home. A lot of new requests is how to make their office space for their rental in the ski resort area more pleasant and more sunlight.
Thank you so much. Now for our last question, how do luxury properties in Asia compare to other global luxury real estate markets? And what sets them apart? If you want to go ahead and answer that first, Ms. Acme, go right ahead.
So for us, I guess for Niseko, we still are like an emerging market and still growing. I would think the two gentlemen's market is a lot more mature than us. But at the same time, we definitely see a really huge boom. Again, I do think after COVID, you know, everyone's kind of locked up in the city. It kind of present a different potential for us, which is a more remote outside of Tokyo or Osaka, the urban area, and people do want to get back to nature in a way after the pandemic. So that's something that I see for the trend that we're seeing here as a luxury property.
Yes, for Thailand, it's felt like for luxury properties, you know, for international market to come look at Thailand. It's not just the property itself. It's more of the culture, the health conscious kind of influence that we had been gaining momentum, the medical tourism. So all these sort of keywords are actually what makes up what Thailand travel investment would be. And that's why people choose Thailand to be one of the option to maybe invest in one of the property, because they know if they stay here long-term, 10, 20, 40, 30 years from now, they get older, they know they're here, and it's there's a support for that. I think that's why luxury property is gaining momentum in Thailand. But in overall, I think Asia, Southeast Asia is so, and Japan also, the culture is just very strong, and it's very different from the European and the Americans. So that's why a lot of them are actually considering and already moving here.
Yeah, and I also think related to the brand investment. So with more and more famous brand, and let's say for US market, like an international brand like Park Hyatt or Four Seasons that's in Southeast Asia or in Japan, definitely bring more trust for them to want to invest more in, let's say, in Japan or in Asia market as well. Like it's the familiarity that's providing the credit for them to invest, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, not to get into the politics, but you know, I went to Hua Hin, I went to Phuket. We were seeing people from Europe, every part, like from, you know, all the way west to all the way east. Everyone's here speaking their own languages, and you know, they look at each other like, oh, everyone is here. And here a lot of investments in terms of economics. You know, that's where it's bringing in more people. People from different religions, different cultures, all can can be at the same dining table and enjoy the time together, where there's not a feeling of uncomfort, a discomfort, and that's where makes Bangkok or Phuket one of the nice places that people kind of surprise and they want to be here.
Mr. Han?
Oh, Asia is the place to be. Who doesn't like the warm weather? Who doesn't like the sunlight? Who doesn't like the rain? They love the rain. They see the rain and they run towards the rain. They see the sun and they run towards the sun. It's beautiful. The affluence in Asia is coming up. We are a little bit more educated. We are more affluent. There's a lot of new money coming in and all that. We speak the languages. We are Western educated. We can speak the language. So anybody who comes here can communicate very, very easily, very, very well. The designs that we have are second to none. Our luxurious developments are second to none. They are comparable to the New York. They are comparable to anywhere in the world. With the onset of branded working arrangements and all that, we get the Kempinski, we get the Hiltons, we get all these branded names coming in and doing development here, will give confidence to the people all around the world to say that, hey, I've used this brand before. I'm very, very comfortable with the designs and your finishes and your service. So they've got this development in Asia now. They've got this development in KL now. I want to be part of the story. I want to be part of the success. So they will come. We've got all these great developments and all that. And they buy, they invest. They know it is well looked after. They know we can get good returns, good yields. And it's beautiful weather, beautiful food, beautiful people. All right. The only thing that we need to work on is the legal framework for overseas investor who wants to invest in an Asian country. The legal framework must be set up so that they can understand and they can appreciate, and it's easy for them. So Malaysia used to have Malaysia My Second Home, whereby you can apply for that certificate where we can come to Malaysia and you go buy a property and you can stay there for a limited period. It's on a renewal basis and all that. And then you can enjoy all the warm hospitality and all that. But the legal framework must be there. They must know that what are the requirements? Does it fit me? And then they come. So we have a lot of people who come here who was working here, and when they retired, they remained and stay there for the next 20 years. Simply amazing. But the legal framework must be there. Malaysia is part of the Commonwealth countries and all that. So our legal framework is quite similar to the English system. So we are quite okay, but we need to make sure that the public or the people outside there knows that what are my legal requirements, what are things that I need to do to stay there on a longer term, or even come there for a holiday. And they want to be safe, they want to be secure. But interesting enough, gated living community, either landed or in a condominium, is quite a high priority. Very interesting. I've spoken to a lot of my clients and all that, and they say gated security is ranks quite highly and all that. So I think you talk about luxury living in Asia. We're right up there with the best. So yeah, come to Asia.
I love that you said that with conviction. Thank you, Mr. Low. Judges, great interaction today. Thank you so much once again for your time. And to our listeners and viewers, thank you for tuning into another episode of the Property Report podcast by Property Guru. We have more exciting topics lined up in the future, so please stay tuned. And for more information, please visit asiapropertyawards.com. See you next time.